SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com, a beautiful sunny morning. Still remains a little on the chilly side. I'd like to get that spring temperatures, but still, just nice. It lifts the spirits, and anything that is lifting spirits is getting the thumbs up, right, from everybody under stressful conditions. And it just occurs to me, too, is this right? Today's the 17th, yeah. And typically, if we were operating under under our normal scenario, I would be getting in the car at noon, or, you know, typically 12:45 by the time I do all the things that I didn't do in preparation for leaving for Louisville. Yeah. Yeah. The Derby fortnight will have begun as of this afternoon. I'd be winging my way, and we'd be in Mentor. and having tomorrow morning and having breakfast at Waffle House. In fact, I had coffee out of my Waffle House mug today. Maybe that was subconscious. I hadn't thought about this earlier this morning, but no Derby fortnight and no OBS next week either. So we just continue to deal with the circumstance as it has been dealt to us, and that includes what should be a very attractive Saturday tomorrow, most notably at Oaklawn, and it's hard not to focus on the Oaklawn action given the Racing Festival of the South, which now, you know, stretches over 4 weeks as opposed to 4 days. But the Apple Blossom, I think everybody's excited about this tomorrow. Post time, 6:16 Eastern, 5:16 Central. Before that, the Count Fleet, the Grade 3, got a very nice field of 11. And the 14, of course, as advertised for the Apple Blossom, and then intermingled, if you're a pick five player, starts with an allowance. Wild Poppet kind of grabbed me by the lapels down inside with Stewie Elliott for Randy Morse. But Desmond shows up in there. Everfast for Jack Sisterson. Al Stahl, Soaring Bird, may need to use a few to start your pick five. The problem is, you know, where are you going to lean, you know, particularly with that 11-horse field in the Count Fleet? And then I'm anxious to hear what everybody's ideas are in the Apple Blossom. There is speed, and there's real speed in the Count Fleet, too. So the Hog Creek Hustle, I know who Nick Tamaro is going to pick. Nick will be on with us in an hour. And Nick is a huge Hog Creek fan. But there's a couple of horses that might stalk and be in position, kind of stalk and pounce. How do you ignore Whitmore? Bobby's Wicked One, the horses on the front end. It's going to be a little challenging because there is pressure. There is pace pressure. So very excited. We'll talk to Nancy Holtis. Nancy Uri Holtis will join us in this hour opportunity to get some opinions from Nancy and set the stage for the weekend. And, of course, OP running yesterday as well. Before we get through the first segment here, we'll glance at yesterday, including that two-year-old race where the Wesley Ward got run down, got chased and run down. Very interesting. And frankly, not to, you know, I'm so easily distracted. On that topic, and Mike Welch, I thought if you listen carefully to Mike, he was warning you that the Arundel, you know, that the two Arundel horses from Juan Alvarado looked like they had been well prepared up at the farm before coming downstate. And Keen Watifa, which is pretty funny, it's a pretty cute name, and Jaramillo, you know, stayed within reach of Gaffleone and Lime. Lime ended up you know, just getting buried, you know, under 2-5, 30 cents on the dollar. And, I mean, ran okay, but Keen Watifa staying within reach almost 7-1 and 12-1 on Pretzel. So the two Arundel horses, first and third in here, and you know, if you approached it that way, you know it wasn't a monster, but it was $50 for a buck, a $50 try. You know, obviously you were going to key off of Wesley, so we'll see if Wesley Ward today can. Oh, and I just realized I put the chart on the wrong page. I put the chart on today's race where he's going to send out the Lady Shipman, Uncle Mo, first-time starter, Golden Pal. So they come back again today in the second race, 134 at Gulfstream for today's two-year-old race. And the juvenile season just getting going. But anyway, I'll give you the rundown. Pete's going to come in just for a couple of minutes. He's got something at 9:30, but didn't get a chance to talk to Pete last week. And yesterday we kind of ended up, you know, getting steamrolled. And so we'll get Pete in for 12, 13 minutes. Bottom of the hour, Nancy Uri Holtis, Nick Tamaro is mentioned. We'll go out to talk to Hammer. Hammer called me yesterday as he was wandering around and went on a hike. He didn't, you know, a lot of times he goes up in the hills, but, yesterday he was just kind of city streets, and he turned me on to next time we're in California, which probably be December the way things are shaping up. But the Munchbox, apparently a landmark, you know, burger hut, little tiny California. You know, burger and fry and onion ring right up my alley, root beer floats. And Hammer was like stunned that they were open, but it's a takeout, you know, you go up to a window. So he sent me a picture of the Munchbox. Very, very cool. We'll talk to Ed DeRosa and James Scully, of course, Jay Pribman, who I understand is a big Munchbox fan. And before we wrap up today, I've been meaning these last several Fridays for weekend preview, I've been meaning to get a hold of Lafitte Pinkai III. And Lafitte, of course, anchoring the America's Day at the Races shows. And so we'll check in. We'll check in with him and we'll see how Lafitte's holding up. And asked him, was curious about his father, who actually had a little, was kind of unnerved him for a little bit, but he's okay. They were a little worried that Lafitte was taking ill, but he's all right. And so we'll talk to Lafitte Pinkai, and I'm not sure yet, Steve Anderson, who we talked to earlier in the week, I would love to get Steve in as well in hour three. A lot of hard news, and Hammer will touch on a couple of things, maybe the Del Mar topic, because he and I talked, as I just mentioned, yesterday, and Del Mar is hoping to run, expecting to run Joe Harper, and even if it's, you know, spectator free, but from what Hammer understands, there's no prospect for starting early. And, you know, much like the discussion about Saratoga, where, in fact, I know last night there was all kinds of Twitter speculation regarding how the, you know, how Saratoga is going to be handled. And we did discuss, you know, with Rich Eng yesterday, if you were listening to the replay, you know, the kind of wondering out loud about, you know, what, you know, ideally New York wants to, Naira wants to run at Saratoga. But at the same time, if it's spectator free, well, does it make sense to try to move everybody up here? It doesn't seem like it makes that much sense. It seems like once you got Belmont running, that it would make more sense to stay at Belmont. Of course, yesterday, New York having to respond to the governor's instruction, you know, pushing to mid May, extending essentially the, you know, the stay at home instructions, and also basically imploring everybody to wear masks in public. There was already instruction for the essential staffing, like at in stores, for instance, to have everybody wear them, you know, on that front. So Saratoga and Del Mar, very much on everybody's mind, and we'll touch on, I think, mostly on the Del Mar side. And I guess I could mention, too, the announcement yesterday that Scott Chaney, who, of course, you know, is synonymous with stewarding in California, Chaney is taking the executive directorship of the CHRB. Rick Baedeker, of course, retired 2 weeks ago, which had been, you know, which had been planned. And, you know, Chaney certainly familiar with the situation in California. And we'll talk to Hammer. There's real concerns and angst out west. I also wanted to get Steve Anderson in because he was going to help us with Australia tonight and tomorrow, into tomorrow. And if you haven't looked yet again, and I didn't really advertise this as much as we did last week with those championships, but there are some really good, really good stakes again tonight and into the morning hours at Randwick, including the Rich Moët and Chandon, Champagne Stakes, 400,000 Australian, which is about 270,000. And there's also a couple of smaller stakes, the JRA, the Japan Racing Association plate, late, 1 a.m. Eastern, 10 o'clock Pacific. The Moët and Chandon, 12:20 a.m. tomorrow morning on the East Coast, 9:20 Pacific. So, I mean, this is just like we said, it's Hollywood. It's like what we used to do with Hollywood Park. There's also the Packer Plate, $140,000. And there was one more. Where's the other one? Where's the other nice stake? There's the car, which is $140,000. The race with my horse. The all age stake, 480,000, the Schweppes all aged, where Santa Ana Lane is going to try to break this scheme. Lost six straight, but I tell you, there's a couple of horses in here that look okay. They look you know, they're younger and in form, including Bivouac. So we'll head to the break, and we will start things off with Pete. As we go, let me give you some of the other details from yesterday at Gulfstream. And also, we got to talk about the very difficult, yet another jackpot bet disaster. This one at Remington over the weekend, and a dead heat that cost, seemingly cost, we'll see, you know, we'll see if the decision holds, but Remington arguing that the multiple ticket, you know, we haven't really had one of these conversations, and certainly not with a dead heat, but a very unpleasant, unpalatable, and kind of difficult to justify with, you know, a ticket, with ticket that, you know, that's got the winner. There just seemed to be an easier way, you know, to rectify this. Just because there were multiple ticket, because of the dead heat, there's individual winners in a dead heat. I mean, they split the pot and they pay both, you know, both sequences. I mean, if the two and the three dead heat, well, the super and everything else, the multi-race wagers, they pay separately. They split the pool, you know, depending on how many tickets in each. So at the very least, having the dead heat winner, having a dead heat winner in the jackpot, you split the pool at the least. I don't know. It's a very, I put a call into Scott Wells and Matt Vance, maybe not today, but next week. You know, Matt Vance, who's the vice president of racing and wagering operations, and we'll see about getting Matt in to explain how they, you know, how they arrived at this decision. And it just, is it me, or is the jackpot bet scenario just more trouble than it's worth? I mean, just nonstop headaches. Some good prices yesterday at Gulfstream beside the two-year-old race. Pretty good. Yeah, I was kind of watching. I wasn't involved at all, but it was pretty good. There was some pretty good action yesterday. And then at Oaklawn, you know, a couple there too, actually. John Prather with that Tashkent, $40. There was one. What was it? Who was the race? There was one race yesterday. I got to find it. There was a race yesterday where I thought there was a horse that should have been more, you know, should have been more obvious. We'll get going. We got lots to do. Weekend preview at the races, SiriusXM. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio. Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Oh, well, come on, everybody, let's get together tonight. I got some money in my jeans and I'm really gonna spend it right. Well, I've been doing my homework all the week long, and now the house is empty and my folks are gone. Woo, come on, everybody. Come on, everybody.
I guess we're back. I don't know what the, I'm sorry, Case. I missed that. That's my fault. I was looking at PPs actually, including speaking of jackpot bet. There it is again. Saturday, Gulfstream's going to, I asked Mike Welch yesterday, if you were listening with Mike Welch, and he had not heard anything. And then literally hours later, they announced that they were going to do a force out on Sunday. So Gulfstream 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and haven't looked at that sequence yet. I'm sure Gus will dig into it too. So we'll give you a couple of different options, and starts at 3:23 on Sunday. So you know, from a standpoint of having things to do, we really are swinging from vine to vine, right? Between the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, it's like there's something to look at and involve yourself. And on Sunday, a chance for the distribution. And as of yesterday, I know it was getting, what I tell Mike, it was like close to $1 million. Is that right? Here we go. I'll tell you exactly. Yeah, it's over $1 million now. $1,000,052. And so you got Friday and Saturday, assuming it doesn't get hit. And so I don't know. How much did they, I'm curious now, how much did they handle in this spot yesterday? 616,000. Unbelievable. Just crazy. Just crazy. Pete Fornatale joins us just for a couple of minutes. Didn't want another week to go by without getting a chance to check in with Pete and see how he's faring. And Pete, good morning.
Good morning to you, Steve. I'm so glad we were able to get this visit in today. I did want to check in. It's been crazy all over, but good to be with you here this morning.
Well, you know, one thing we wanted to do this morning, and you're the right guy for me to mention it. Eddie Cochran, and it's hard to believe. Eddie Cochran, 60 years ago today, killed in that. British cab accident, unbelievable tragedy. And we're going to give you a bunch of Eddie Cochran cuts, including our favorites. And somebody that, I've been talking about, Pete, horses that time forgot. Well, it just seems like Eddie Cochran's a guy that several generations of fans of music that aren't giving enough appreciation. I mean, I love his stuff.
It's a good point. I mean, he's one of the OG guys. A couple things leap to mind. Obviously, the influences. You see, real giants clearly covering the material and being into the material. I think of The Who at Woodstock and the great version of Summertime Blues. And then also, unfortunately, helped provide a little bit of an archetype in terms of the trajectory of a lot of rock stars in terms of the sort of tragic underpinnings we see to so many of these stories. But I'm always glad to have the chance to remember him. That moment for me, I got into him backwards, probably through Woodstock, seeing, I'd heard Summertime Blues, but certainly I can remember being about, 12 or 13 and watching on Channel 13 with my dad, the Woodstock movie coming on, and just going nuts, of course, for the Who performance. And being like, what's that song? And then my dad, coaching me up on who Eddie Cochran was and what he meant. So always good to get a chance to talk about him.
Yeah, we're going to play some full cuts, a lot like we did with John Prine. But, as big as he was here, his influence in the U.K., Joe Strummer and the Clash, the Kinks, the Stones, the Beatles, the Sex Pistols. They held him in the highest regard. And you hear strains of his music, every generation since. And we're gonna hear a few. I think we got about four cuts, including Summertime Blues, which I'm not a huge fan of, But Eddie Cochran fans would get angry if I don't play. if I don't play Summertime Blues.
There's a lot of good stuff to choose from. There's a lot of good stuff to choose from in the Cochran catalog. But yeah, that one, in terms of my personal connection with him, and many people's, I think, have to at least get a little shout.
Well, Something Else is the one that is, my absolute favorite. And not only is it just a great song and danceable and everything else, there's a really good message buried in it. And it's my buddy's band in Cincinnati, Doug Wagner and the Warsaw Falcons. That was the first time I heard Something Else. And just great. So we're going to hear. I think
certainly resonated with the Kinks and Ray Davies. That's a perfect example of the connection. He definitely. It is interesting how the material did resonate with like the more. I mean, granted, they obviously the Kinks and the Who could totally rock, but also two of the more literate rock bands you'll ever find in terms of their material, and both clearly influenced and deeply connected to Cochran's work.
Now we're going to hear. We're also going to hear 20 Flight Rock, which is pretty funny and kind of a mirthful tune. Couple of minutes, Pete. How you keeping busy? You've been touching on the same kinds of things that we've been doing and trying to keep people engaged.
Yeah, we've debuted some new material this week. Actually, we've got JK with a spinoff, if you will, where he's going to sit down with some folks he wants to talk about. And Steve, I know you're on the list of people he has for this project in mind, wants to sit down with some of his most interesting people in the game and have really long form one-on-one conversations. And we debuted the first of those this week on the network with Gary Stevens, his friend and colleague from the Fox shows, of course, great Hall of Famer. And so I haven't even had a chance to listen yet. I've been so busy, but I'm eager to check that out. We've got another one of these happy hour contests today. It starts at 3:00. It's going to be a little 6-race pick and pray over at horseplayers.com. Costs $20. We're going to be doing a live stream during the whole thing. You can watch on the Breeders' Cup Facebook page, and you can also start your journey to winning your Breeders' Cup betting challenge seat, and all the proceeds go to charity. We've been splitting the rake between the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance and Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. We've also been giving a lot of love to the New York Racetrack Chaplaincy, who've been so busy and really on the front lines of everything going on here in New York. We have a link to donate to them on our page over at the TRF site, which is trfinc.org/players. I did a really interesting project yesterday. I don't think you can see it in the USA, but for the first time, I did a full shift on Sky Sports Racing covering Gulfstream with the remote setup down in my home office, a.k.a. the Brooklyn bunker. And, you know, there were some tech issues in the first hour, but I think we've got it ironed out where I'm hopefully going to get to do that once a week or so. So that'll be a lot of fun. And then other than that, a lot of homeschooling. We're deep into our Star Wars unit of homeschooling with Perrin. That seems to be going very well. And I'm just sort of doing what I can to get through the day with the serious homeschool stuff, with attempting to teach in a language I don't really speak. But we're having fun.
Well, it sounds great. I did see the link yesterday with Gary Stevens, and Stevens has provided for with me too.
He's been great on you. Yep.
When he does the historic stuff, particularly, and you know, he's got that professional athlete, you know, institutional memory of their career, and you could talk about hockey players and pro golfers that literally can tell you every shot they've hit in their career, and hockey players who will tell you literally they remember every shift that they were on the ice. It's astounding. And Stevens is the same way. And I know people kid him about, you know, the best horse he ever sat on. That's from Point Given to Rock Hard 10, to, you know, to
oh,
one
yeah.
after the other. People hear that whatever he says, you know, the best horse I ever sat on. But he's terrific on that front. And Pete, I know we got to you a couple of minutes late, but I did want to check in and, you know, give you a chance to remind everybody what's been going on, and Matt Bernier's show too early in the weeks, and a lot to keep everybody, you know, just everybody keep their mind occupied.
Yeah, InTheMoneyPodcast.com, you can check it all out. We've got some other new stuff coming. I'm glad you mentioned Matt. He's been doing a particularly good job with a lot of evergreen type content, which I think, you know, for me, obviously, I spend at least 50% of my podcast listening, with, you know, trying to learn more and educate about what's going on. But it's also wonderful to be able to just forget about what's going on for a minute and think about what the best Derby field was in aggregate of the last 20 years and things like that Matt's doing on his show. So it's definitely worth checking out. Folks, you can subscribe directly to the In the Money podcast feed. If you're an Apple person or whatever your pod player is, you can find us. But you can also just go to my site and find all the shows, InTheMoneyPodcast.com. And we've had a lot of great questions coming in, too. So we encourage people, if you have questions about the contest world or if you're one of the newer players getting involved, we've all heard these stories about the ADW signups being through the roof. I'm sure a lot of those people have found their way to you, Steve, and are probably hearing me for the first time. If you have any specific questions you want answered, feel free to hit me up there, and we can try to answer them here, or I'll answer them on the podcast, because we want to try to take these new eyeballs that are on us, all these new players, and try to get them going on their horse playing paths. And if I can help in any way, hit me up. That website once again, InTheMoneyPodcast.com.
Pete Fornatel, everybody, looms boldly on Twitter, and UT Big Hair, the John and Jonathan and everybody else that's contributing and trying to help everybody learn the game, if that's the starting point. And of course, you know, Rich Ang yesterday, we brought up Rich and his book, Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies, but lots to keep you occupied. You mentioned the contest element, and Holly Short and Michelle Ravencraft are literally, you know, dancing to the tune that they can create, and that includes incorporating, you know, as many different racing venues, you know, into the contest lineups that they can, and the international stuff is making its way in and as well. So everybody dealing as best they can with the circumstance, and it does feel like we're on the cusp of getting some additional venues up and running. Pete, have a great weekend. We'll talk more in detail next week.
Thank you very much, Steve. Yeah, we should loop back and talk a little John Prine next week. I like that idea.
Absolutely.
But always a pleasure.
Pete Fornatel, everybody. Let's take a break, and we're going to hear from Nancy Holtis. We're going to go out to Hot Springs. And as we do that, you know, I'm just looking here on something just popped up on Twitter. Brian Dennehy. And it was sad to see Brian Dennehy pass. I have a Brian Dennehy story that I got to slip in. I was at O'Hare. I'm pretty sure I was at O'Hare, and I'm sitting in a lounge in one of the gate holding areas. And all of a sudden, you know how those gate holding area, you know, those lineup of, you know, 6, 8, 12 seats. And all of a sudden the thing goes boom, boom. The thing, like, you know, sort of jumps up in the air, you know, and you know, somebody plops down, and I turn and I look away, and then I look back, and it's Brian Dennehy sitting down next to me, and he's a big man, and I look at him, I said, "You're Brian Dennehy." And he shook his head. He said, "Yep." That was it. That was my Brian Dennehy experience. Although I did see him in Death of a Salesman. I think Death of a Salesman on Broadway, right? I got to look that up. Back after this, Nancy Holtis joins us.
The latest racing news. At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Summertime. Oh, well, my mom and papa told me, son, you gotta make some money. Now, if you wanna use a car to go riding next Sunday. Oh, well, I didn't go to work, told the boss I was sick.
Now, you can't use a car cause you didn't work a lick.
Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do, but there ain't no cure for the summertime blues. I'm gonna take 2 weeks, gonna have a fine vacation. I'm gonna take my problem to the United Nations. Well, I called my congressman and he said, whoa,
to help you, son, but you're too young to vote.
Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do, but there ain't no cure for the summertime blues.
There you go. The Summertime Blues and Eddie Cochran. And I just looked it up. Brian Denny, 1999. Unbelievable. It feels like a million years ago. But Death of a Salesman at the Eugene O'Neill. And as Willie Loman. Happy to get a chance to visit with Nancy Holthus in advance of tomorrow's big Apple Blossom Count Fleet card. Another great Saturday at Oaklawn as the season, you know, really momentum gathering toward the Arkansas Derby, you know, first Saturday in May date. And Nancy, good morning.
Good morning. I'm glad you came on when you did because I was singing, and I don't think your listeners need to hear that.
That's one thing we haven't seen in from the Oaklawn feed.
That's one good way to lose listeners for you. I love it.
Well, Nancy, Oaklawn, you know, it's such an unusual circumstance, obviously, and in you know, of the thoroughbred venues, the mainstream, the A tracks. I mean, obviously, Gulfstream and Tampa, they are on the back end now of, you know, their winter meets, and Oaklawn continues, you know, essentially in the prime, the racing festival of the South, the, as I called it, the elongated version of it. And, you know, you guys still have got, you know, another 3 weekends of top level action.
Yeah, and we're coming up on one of my favorites because the Apple Blossom is by far one of my favorite stakes. You know, we've seen some true amazing fillies and mares. This is one of the key races of the year, not just because it's, you know, one of the standout filly and mare races to kind of start off a lot of horses' campaigns. You know, we've got to see Azari Zenyatta, Havre de Grace, Close Hatches is one of my all-time favorites, Untappable, and last year, Midnight Bisou. And this year, it's unbelievable. I mean, yeah, we're one of the only games in town, but nonetheless, I think it would be obviously a standout bunch regardless. And, you know, I did get on the phone and talk to Dwayne Lucas this morning, and he said, you know, it's just an unbelievable lineup. And whoever wins this certainly goes to the head of the class. And this race is really as good as the Breeders' Cup Distaff. So it's going to be a great betting race. Full field of 14. And, you know, not only with the Apple Blossom, but we've also got the Grade 3 Count Fleet Sprint, which, if you remember last year, brought us another champion with Matoli. So this race is, both these races are just proven to give us champions.
It's a good point about Matoli, who was, you know, right in the midst at that point now of the, you know, the upswing that, you know, that carried him, you know, right to an Eclipse Award. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I had kind of forgotten that.
How did you forget Matoli?
Well, you know, it's funny, too, because there was question at that point. Wasn't there the question as to whether 6 furlongs was too short for him?
Well, yeah, that's actually a good point. And it's funny because during kind of Matoli's campaign, you know, he was an absolute standout, you know, sprinting. But, you know, kind of looking back on his races, you know, he was impressive. You know, he ran second in the gazebo when he did make his stakes debut. And, you know, there was kind of that question. It was, and it was to a horse by the name of Born in Nixa from the barn of Steve Margolis. So, you know, there was that question, but
That's
he rebounded
right.
in the Bachelor. He won the Count Fleet. He went on to win the Churchill Downs, the Run Happy. But I tell you what, I remember seeing him win those races here at Oaklawn. And I remember telling Steve, I said, especially after the Count Fleet, I said, "You've got the Breeders' Cup Sprint winner." And he just kind of looked at me and smiled, because, you know, a lot of people, when they do run their horses here at Oaklawn, you know as well as I do, Steve, that, you know, people kind of make their horses schedule backwards from the Breeders' Cup. That's the end-all ultimate goal. And I'm sure that was obviously in Steve's calendar. But after kind of cementing that that Count Fleet Sprint and beating a very good field that year, especially in Whitmore, you know, that I'm sure that put a smile on his face. And it's not always a constant thing to see a smile on Steve Ashton's face.
I'll send you. I don't know if you remember it from. It's when Creator won the Arkansas Derby. I'll send you the greatest picture of Asmussen with Dale Romans ever. You know, hours, like a probably an hour plus after the race, on the backside by the barn, and with Asmussen holding the, you know, the Arkansas Derby trophy, and a forlorn looking Dale Romans. speaking of a smiling Steve Asmussen, you'll enjoy it. I'll send you that after we finish. Before we talk the handicapping of the two stakes in particular, we should mention that there's a very nice card today, and
yes,
the Arkansas Bred Rainbow came up with a field of 10. And quick thoughts about this spot.
You know, this is actually a really good race. And do you remember when I would kind of inject myself into Rick Hammerly's spot?
Sure.
When he was doing the show and you were asking him who's the greatest Arkansas bred of all time. And of course I had to interject my sarcasm and say, well, duh, it's me. But there are some really good Arkansas breds. We have the Running of the Rainbow and the Rainbow Miss on today's program. The Rainbow Miss is actually race 5 on today's card. Interesting, Will Van Meter has had a phenomenal meeting.
Yes.
7 wins and just 26 starts. He's at a 27% clip. He sends out 2 in this particular field. He sends out the Mary Rose and the number 8 Sakani. The Mary Rose actually lost a kind of controversial photo back on April 2nd, just got bested running second by a nose in an allowance. She actually was the lone 3-year-old in that allowance group. He also sends out Sakani, a really nice 3-year-old filly by Double Irish. This horse, it's interesting, is actually coming off Lasix for this race. She raced on it last time. And I texted Wilby, and I said, you know, just curious. I actually like the off Lasix angle, by the way. Broker maiden by 10, 2 back, coming off the extended layoff. Gate to Wire with Declan Knuckles Cannon aboard was dominant throughout that. She actually ran the fastest six furlongs in the field, scoring her maiden in 10-4. I asked Wilby, I said, you know, why coming off Lasix today? He said she just ran flat with it. So, you know, we're going to take her off. I again, like that angle. But the 5-2 morning line favorite is the 6 Proud Victoria from the barn of Ron Moquet. She broke her maiden at Remington. And I remember watching this race at home back in early December, and I asked Ron when he got back to Oaklawn, I said, why would you run an Arkansas bred at Remington in early December when the Arkansas bred purses are the same for open runners? And he said, you know, I've got so many of them, I had to get a race in her. So it proved to be the right thing for him, because he came back in early February and won a money allowance with her at First Asking against older runners. She then ran against Down the Dusty Road Company, also against older. She ran fourth to a very solid group. Bye Bye Jay, who won a stakes here last year, and then a stakes here again this year. Another group that was next out winners. But Proud Victoria definitely looks the one to beat. She breaks from the sixth hole, gets reunited with Ricardo Santana. She's also the only two-time winner in the field. That really does kind of make her a standout. But I definitely would not be afraid to use Wilby's horse on top. I really like Sakani, and especially her on the outside. I think definitely kind of gives Declan a few more advantages out of the starting gate.
Now, and then in the boys race, nothing all that clever, although I thought that you mentioned Moquet, and I thought Man in the Can 8-1 was probably the right price with the more obvious Temp Fate from Carl DeVille and Captain Don from the Von Hemel barn.
Yeah, it's interesting and not unusual in an Arkansas bred race to see several maidens try to upset the apple cart. There's three in here. Interesting runner, Chris Hartman, sends out the number 10, Zeno Boys. This horse actually debuts, and kind of surprisingly, Chris Hartman has had a fairly slow meet. He's only at 5%. But he's rounded out the exacta and the try 17 times in his 60 starters. So don't let that kind of scare you off. This horse has made all 7 career starts down in southern Florida at Gulfstream or Tampa. 3 winners is the winningest horse in the field. First time trying Arkansas breds and already a stakes winner. Lots of speed. Joe Talamo aboard, heavy, heavy favorite at 8-5. And we have seen horses, we did it with Bye Bye Jay last year, coming from Gulfstream and transition those wins over to Oaklawn very easily. Easily looks like the one to beat on paper. I also am giving Man in the Can. I don't know if anybody watches SNL, but that was a Ben Affleck skit when he was a radio DJ, Man in the Can. Back when Jimmy Fallon was on there, Man in the Can, Ron Moquet, Joel Rosario in the iron makes the second start off the freshening. Ran 6th, beaten less than 4 lengths. That was also against older allowance runners. Second off the break, I like that Rosario gets aboard, but Captain Don, how can you not root for Don Von Hemel? This horse raced over the mud last time, probably didn't care for the mud. And again, I don't think it's the footing that they care for. It's the kickback that they don't really like. I like the fact that the 3-year-old gets a fast track today and has really been battle tested, already has 5 starts under his belt. So I do think it's going to be Zeno Boys on top for the barn of Chris Hartman. And I certainly wouldn't look too far past Captain Don for the exotics.
Let's turn to the Saturday action. This card today, though, 114 horses entered in 10 races. There's 8 races with 12 horses, and then the 2 stakes are 8 and 10. Unbelievable, averaging 11.4 today. And then, of course, tomorrow, full fields in nearly every race. And let's talk about the Apple Blossom first. And I don't want, Nancy, don't let me forget, I want to ask you about how Venetian, oh my God, Harbor's workout went today.
Well, as far as I know, all systems go. I'll have to refer to my clocker intel. You know, they do give me all kinds of good scoop. I'll also have to text Richard Baltus and see what his thoughts are. But Amy Galassi, I tell you what, she is a badass horsewoman. Can I say that? I just did. She's a phenomenal horsewoman in her own right. She actually texted out a picture of Venetian Harbor. Looks fantastic. There's not a pimple on that horse. So very excited to see Venetian Harbor in the paddock. And lots of horses are taking the opportunity to school at the 11 o'clock hour between training and first post as well.
Well, we look forward to the Fantasy as part of the three-year-old portion of the Racing Festival of the South, and touched on a few of the Florida shippers yesterday with Mike Welch, Nancy. And let's start with the Apple Blossom, then we'll come back to the Count Fleet. How are you approaching the Grade One tomorrow?
Well, you know, it's interesting because you do have the winners from the Viacoa, which is Paul McGee's Go Google Yourself. And it's scary when you do Google yourself, by the way. And this mare is 12 to 1 on the morning line. She hasn't raced since that victory in the Grade 3 Viacoa. She is 2 for 2 at Oaklawn. I love that. She is in the money all 9 starts at a mile and a 16th. She is an equine ATM. I love that. Also, you have the winner of the Azari with Serengeti Empress. She got her first win in the Azari since the Kentucky Oaks. Now, mind you, she's been extremely consistent since the Kentucky Oaks and finally got off the Kentucky Oaks, I guess you can say. Very impressive. She was a gate-to-wire standout. Not sure if the slot flattered her, but very, very effective. She is a need-the-lead type of horse to me, but there is some other speed in here, and they're going to make her work for it. Interesting is the number 14, CC. The post is definitely not going to help this lightly raced four-year-old filly, but she's got kind of an interesting story. She does make her third start off the extended break. She had an injury after the Acorn, where she ran fourth back in early June at Belmont, but she came back to win a very soft allowance. It was only a 5-horse field, but she did it very willingly, even though she bobbled a little bit at the start. Then they kind of let what a lot of trainers say, we let her tell us, and they thought she was doing well enough. She scored the Grade One Beholder Mile, stretching out second off the break, and very impressive again in that 6-horse field. She already earned a 100 buyer, and they're going to step her up again in another Grade One, see if she can score back-to-back Grade One events. Again, that post position does not help her, but I do like the fact that Victor Espinoza is coming in for the mount. Mike McCarthy won the City of Light here in 2018 in the Oaklawn Handicap, so he knows how to ship horses in and get them to victory. This is a really interesting race, probably one of the toughest Apple Blossoms we have seen in quite some time. I mean, I really think, Steve, this is going to be a rider's race. Come dancing. Carlos Martin sent this one to Wayne Lucas about 3 weeks ago, and I really think that was a smart decision. I think you either need to send them right on top of the race or send them in a couple weeks out. She's had a chance to get a couple of works over the surface. Florent Giroux is in the irons. She ran very well off the break. She comes in off of the Filly Mare Breeders' Cup Sprint back in November. And Wayne, who obviously knows how to get fillies and mares ready, I talked to Wayne this morning, and he says, you know, I think I've campaigned maybe 18 world champions. And I said, holy crap, Wayne, you've lost count. But, you know, I said, you know, how does she compare, you know, maybe personality-wise to the other champions that you've trained. He said, you know what? She fits the scope. Just her mannerisms, her training, quirks, and that type of thing, she definitely fits the scope. So that's all I need to hear. You know, I mean, she, the way that the races that she's competed in, and the fact that she went off as the favorite in the Ogden 5th last year at Belmont to Midnight Bisou tells me that, you know, she is definitely fits in this category. And they waived off retirement for her after the Breeders' Cup, which tells me, you know, some horses just do not do well in retirement, and they thought enough of her to run her in her six-year-old campaign. So I'm very interested to see her run, and the fact that they thought, you know, we're going to send her to Wayne. He knows how to get a filly and mare ready. So she's had some two really good works over the Oaklawn surface. So, man, this is going to be a really good race, and I think it's going to be partially a rider's race as well.
Yeah, and there seems like there's plenty of speed involved here.
Yeah.
Got to mention Serengeti Empress coming back after that tour de force return in the Azari. And, you know, she really only knows one way, but she's got cookie dough to her inside. Not the only potential pace pressure down inside. You know, you got Ollie's Candy, who seems to want to be a little forward. How about Emma is certainly, you know, going to be forward. And even though, you know, you look at Come Dancing and her just off the pace kind of a style, that comes mostly in her sprints. So she, just with natural gait speed, is going to be, you know, and the way Giroux's been riding all year, you just get the sense that she'll be part of the pace. So it doesn't seem like Serengeti Empress can possibly get away. You know, and I haven't even mentioned CeCe and what Victor's going to have to do with her.
Right.
Google yourself. It likes to be at least, you know, in touch with the leaders and being outposted as well. You know, Brian Hernandez Jr. is going to have to, you know, hustle from the gate and get position with her. So there's a lot going on here. You got 14 horses headlong into that turn going a mile and a 16th. It just feels like this pace has got to be at the minimum honest and potentially, you know, quite fast. And so from that front, you know, looking at, you know, at some of the off the pace types, Street Band, I don't see how you don't at least think about her. Point of Honor, you know, coming back. I imagine there's going to be a horse or two that, you know, that's going to sit, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh, that's going to put in a run, you know, into the turn. And, you know, then there's a, you know what's interesting about this race? And we're going to be talking about it all morning. A horse like Lady Apple.
Oh, I'm just going to say her. Yep.
You know, who was frankly never involved in the Azari. Lady Apple is 3-for-4 at Oaklawn, and Asmussen has famously, you know, had horses like this come back and run well. Lady Apple might sit just behind the speed trip as well. Santana certainly knows where to position himself. It's just an engaging, terrific field of 14 here. And I don't know. I don't know how many I'm going to use tomorrow in the pick four and the pick five.
Well, when you figure this race out, you text me and let me know.
I love it. Let's talk. Nancy Uri-Holtis is with us, and we're talking about tomorrow's terrific card at Oaklawn. Count Fleet Thoughts with 11 of them, and there's Honest Pace in this as well.
You know what? There is, and I think Ron Moquet is glad that they decided to retire Matoli because he now has a chance